Promotional consideration for Growing Greater Philadelphia provided by Citizens Bank, Drexel University, and the General Building Contractors Association.
This is the Growing Greater Philadelphia podcast, bringing you more of the interviews and stories from the Growing Greater Philadelphia radio program. Now, here is Matt Cabry.
Chuck, thanks for being with us. The Beata Institute at Drexel University's Close School of Business.
School of Entrepreneurship.
Close School of Entrepreneurship.
Yes.
Very important, actually.
Yeah.
That's great. So tell us a little bit about one, and you were touching on this, but I'd love to hear about your experiences as an entrepreneur. And, you know, what was your first kind of entree? How did you say to yourself, this is what I want to do, and this is how I identify myself as an entrepreneur?
Sure, sure. So, you know, it's a little bit different today than it was 20 or 30 years ago when I think, you know, people thought of entrepreneurship more as small business and maybe sole proprietorships or partnerships. And you were thinking about building something new, especially around software technologies in the 80s and 90s. You know, things were really just starting to take off. Things were just getting hot. So there was a lot of trial and error, and people were trying a number of different things. But essentially, the starting point for me was coming out of a very large enterprise software company, realizing that I didn't want to work in that kind of big company environment. I wanted a little more say over my schedule and my lifestyle and everything else that I was doing. So a couple of us started this small enterprise software consulting firm and ended up building it up to about 25 people, sold it in the mid-90s, and eventually that company went public, and we kind of stayed on with that part of the journey also. But it was really just about trying to figure out how we could take advantage of a market opportunity, do something big companies weren't doing, and set our own course. And we were able to do that and build the company up, and it was just a lot of fun.
And that was all in the greater Philadelphia region or elsewhere as
well? We started it in South Jersey, in Cherry Hill. So we're based out of Cherry Hill for a while and then Westmont, New Jersey. So we definitely built it up in this area. We did a lot of work internationally, though. So our client bases were all over the world. We did work in South America and Asia, a lot of work in Europe. We were actually affiliated with a company in England, so we spent a lot of time in that part of the world. So we had a strong base here locally, but we had a broad international footprint even as a small company.
Gotcha. And tell us a little bit about the Beata Institute at the Close School of Entrepreneurship of Drexel University.
Sure, that's a mouthful, right? Yeah, so the Beata Institute has actually been around Drexel since 1999. It was created through some donations, primarily by Mel Beata, who named the Institute for his father, Lawrence Beata. Mel's a prominent local entrepreneur, also based in South Jersey. And it's just has served over the past 17, 18 years as the incubator for Drexel startups. So if you're a student or recent graduate, or even alum in some case, and you have an idea and you want to work on it, we have the physical space for them to actually work out of. So it becomes a community of entrepreneurs where we provide them additional content skills workshops, access to service providers like lawyers. We run a variety of workshops and events. We also host our competitions out of there so teams can compete for prize money. And then a lot of hands-on coaching and mentoring because entrepreneurs need a lot of help to get going. So it basically provides all the resources that a Drexel-affiliated startup needs to get started. And it's under the umbrella now of the School of Entrepreneurship. You mentioned the Close School of Entrepreneurship. So it's a Charles D. Close School of Entrepreneurship, which is 5 years old, but the incubator is now part of that.
Gotcha. And you referenced the late 90s, really. 99, I think you referenced with Beata.
Yes, when I got started. Yeah.
So I think that would surprise a lot of people. It's coming up on 20 years.
Yeah.
Is that unique? Was it one of the earlier schools of entrepreneurship or earlier, you know, initiatives to create an institute specific to entrepreneurship?
Really was. You even look at universities today, many of which don't have what we have in terms of a great resource center for entrepreneurs. So for Mal Beata and others to have that vision very early on to create something where students really just needed, again, physical space to get something started and be around other entrepreneurs really was visionary for the time. And it's still even visionary today. We talk to many universities that are still struggling to do what we did a long time ago at Drexel.
And do you think that is indicative of Philadelphia and the DNA that we see in Philadelphia?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's a big part of it. I think, you know, Drexel certainly has the DNA of Philadelphia baked into it, you know, being centered here. And the incubator, again, when you think about Philadelphia and needing to get work done, it's a serious place, right? People want to get work done. And Drexel is very much about getting work done. So I think having that space where people can actually do stuff, it's not just theoretical. How do we apply what we're learning in the classroom to actually real practical physical work becomes the you know, kind of the mantra of what we're doing in the Biota Institute, and I think very much the DNA of Drexel and certainly Philadelphia.
Share with us a little bit about how you found yourself working at Drexel.
Yeah, it's been an interesting journey. So coming out of my earlier startup days in this enterprise software world, finally decided to get my MBA. My mentor at the time was just pushing me to get it done because I was kind of, you know, at a point in my career, I needed to do something different, it seemed like. The MBA seemed a great way to do it. Drexel had a really solid MBA program that would work around my other work commitments at that time and other things I was trying to work on from a startup perspective. So I did the MBA program and essentially started as a class project. A few of us came up with an idea pre-iPhone around leveraging the cell phone as a marketing tool for businesses. So this was really before we were thinking about cell phones and smartphones and cell phones having GPS and, you know, all the cool gizmos and gadgets it has today. So we built a new technology. We got it launched, and we spent 2 years on Drexel's campus in the incubator, the Biota Institute that I now run. So this is, you know, part of the reason I ended up being able to take over Biota and run it effectively. I knew it from the other side, which has been a lot of fun. And we built this company up. We raised all total about $5 million. And the company, what it does today, and it's evolved a bit, is a mobile technology platform for the hotel industry. And we did a lot of work in Mexico and the Caribbean to basically build an application platform for hotels to interact with their guests. And without going into all the detail, it's a very robust, vibrant platform. We spent a lot of time in Mexico and the Caribbean, which was, you know, a lot of fun. Hot at times, but a lot of fun. And we got this thing built up. Along the way, as I was incubating in Biota, I got to know some of the faculty in the College of Business at Drexel. And Donna DeCarlos, who's the dean of the Close School now, got to know her very well. And she one day asked me to teach. And I'd never taught at the college level before. I had my master's degree, but I had never taught. And decided, sure, that sounds like a lot of fun. Didn't know what I was getting myself into at the time, but it was certainly a great opportunity. So I started teaching entrepreneurship, intro to entrepreneurship classes. I ran a startup consulting class for a couple of years. It was very much a side hustle, right?
Yeah.
Just kind of a side gig. And I had a lot of fun with that. It was a little extra money on the side, especially when you're in a startup. You know, little things help here and there. And 5 years ago, a little 5 years ago in January, Don reached out to me and said, we're creating this new school of entrepreneurship, or we just created it. I need entrepreneurs who can teach, who know how to build things, who are happy taking risks, because this is going to be a, you know, pretty risky early stage thing. But, you know, it's an exciting opportunity. And it just seemed like a very natural fit. So I decided with the startup, we came to a natural inflection point with a joint venture we had set up. So it gave me an opportunity to move on and do something else and join full time 4 years ago.
It almost sounds really appropriate that you were basically doing a startup at Drexel in a way.
It very much is. The Close School of Entrepreneurship is very much a startup. Even today, 5 years later, we are still really building it from the ground up. And we do all the things a startup has to do. We have to build our product, which are our classes and our programs. We have to get new customers or clients, which will be our students. We have to build our team, and we've built that from the ground up and our team culture. We're constantly trying to raise money, you know, just constantly to build and expand what we're doing, and just trying to essentially build our value proposition and market it and communicate it. So we're doing everything that a startup has to do. We're under the umbrella of a large university, but, you know, we're very much in a still relatively small unit and are able to, you know, continue to work in a way that very much feels like a startup.
Yeah, very entrepreneurial, appropriately.
Very. Right.
So you mentioned your clients or your students. Talk with us a little bit about a couple things. What are you seeing in young people who are coming into Drexel today and into Philadelphia today? And, you know, that distinction between natives and those who are coming here specifically because of Philadelphia or the Drexel brand and image and reputation that they want to be a part of.
Sure.
And then a sidebar, if I can extend this question a little bit more, which is, you know, of all the things that then the tools that you're teaching and that your colleagues are teaching students in your classes, are there two or three that really stand out for you as this is like crucial stuff that these young people need to know?
Sure. So start with the students. Certainly, you know, those students that are based here regionally in Philadelphia, many of them know about Drexel and they're coming to Drexel for a large part because of the co-op experience. Drexel's co-op schools, as you probably know, so most students go for 5 years, but they do 3 6-month paid internships over those 5 years. And you just end up with a very great experiential, well-grounded, experience that combines academics with the work experience, which is really fantastic. So from an entrepreneurship perspective, the attraction that we see, or maybe I should say the attraction that we tried to build, is that association of entrepreneurship in Philadelphia has really been burgeoning over the past 10 years. You have a great number of support organizations like Philly Startup Leaders and organizations like 1776, which have just really added a lot of substance to the local startup scene. And we play that up very heavily in recruitment. And that's whether it's local students or students coming from any part of the country, any part of the world. We showcase Philadelphia. It's very important because if you're going to school, especially for entrepreneurship, you probably want to be in a community that has entrepreneurial support, especially if you're going to start something here. So we do certainly make that connection and feel that's very important. The other part of your question regarding skills and classes and things that are really important, I mean, from an entrepreneurship perspective, there's so many. And we focus not just on the mechanics of starting a new company, but even more so focus on developing the entrepreneurial mindset. It's all about the individual as the entrepreneur. And we make that distinction between the entrepreneur and entrepreneurship. Right? One's about the persons, the other about the process. We care more about the person because, you know, a lot of our students will not ever start something on their own. They might start as part of a team. They might join a startup. They might work in a big company that needs innovative skills and entrepreneurial skills. That mindset focus becomes really important. So within that context, then there's so many fundamental things that we really try to help engage and improve within our students. So ideation, creativity, opportunity recognition, resilience, learning from failure. And one of our marquee courses in that particular one is we have a course called Ready, Set, Fail. And it's a course about failure. And it's a course about learning from failure and being resilient. How do you learn from your mistakes and challenges? And how do you, you know, kind of move on from there? As well as we look at, well, why do startups fail? Because most do. So what are some of the reasons for that? And how can you maybe mitigate some of those risks early on so that you avoid some common traps that a lot of startups fall into?
And do you touch on this notion that I'm not sure if this is something you share or think is fair or reasonable, but it's okay to fail. You know, we hear that a lot, but is that really the case, especially in the entrepreneurship world?
Yeah, it's interesting. There's a lot of people who say, well, you shouldn't be thinking that way. It's not okay to fail. You shouldn't, you know, even set out to do that. But I think it's, you know, especially in college, I think it's okay to have an environment which you can try things, and not that you will set up to fail, you set yourself up to fail or set up to fail, but that you know that if it doesn't go in a way that you intended, that you have some safety nets there in the beginning. And that allows, in my mind, a broader set of students to take risks. So it's those students who maybe are a little more risk adverse or don't have the capacity or the capability to and the resources to start something. Gives them maybe a little more of a window to maybe, you know what, I'm going to try something because I do have a bit of safety in it here. I do have a community around me. So what we think is it opens up entrepreneurship to more students. That's our belief.
That makes sense. And I love your distinction between the entrepreneur as the person and entrepreneurism as the process.
Exactly.
That's a really interesting perspective to take, and I think it's really smart. Let's drill down a little bit. Are there entrepreneurs that stand out for you who have come through the program that you're really excited about and proud to talk with and proud to talk about as an example of the great work that Drexel and Close and Beata are doing?
Yeah, I mean, so many. I get the privilege of every day working with 15 to 20 startups at any one time that are incubating with us, as well as probably another 20 or 30 ideas that are developing and bubbling up under the surface. So we see a wide range of ideas and a wide range of startups, and we're agnostic in terms of the type of industry we work with, as well as the stage that we work with. So we see a lot of early stage ideas that could come from the software world, from the hardware world, from services, social entrepreneurs who are focused on, you know, creating entities that do good for the world. We've had real estate development ideas, game developers, services companies, just a really wide mix of individuals. So I could say I'm proud of all of them, which is very true. But there are a few that stand out that are really interesting that I think showcase what's happening here in Philadelphia specifically. So one is a company called Turn Water. That's the founder's Mo Zurbin. Mo graduated a couple of years ago. He's located at 1776 here downtown, and he's basically a smart water faucet company. And he is building up this really cool product, consumer product, that will eventually be sold in retail locations, but he's also selling it to real estate developers as a way to very effectively monitor water quality, water usage, filter usage in a very smart way. So it's a faucet attachment, essentially, that's monitored through your Bluetooth phone, a Bluetooth connection on your phone. And it's just a really smart, cool product. And Mo's just a super guy. So he's one. We have started, exited from our incubator a couple of years ago, a company called Scali. The individual, the founder was Chris Gray. Chris was on Shark Tank while he was in school, which was really exciting. Raised some money through a couple of the sharks on Shark Tank. Basically, a scholarship search application that allows students to look for potential scholarships and apply for them. So he's built a very cool, interesting platform that we're very proud of.
Yeah.
But again, there's so many. I mean, I could sit all day and kind of list all the different startups.
So one that pops for me, and I'm not sure if you get this a lot, I feel like they get a lot of exposure, frankly, which is a good thing, is GoPuff and the success that we've seen with it, GoPuff, not just in Philadelphia, but my understanding is they've branched out to other communities around the country as well.
Yeah, they are, I believe, in over 27 cities now. They've raised well over $10 million in capital, came out of Drexel. Say they were students, they were there a little bit before my time at Drexel. But we've engaged with them and they've come back to speak to students, and we've spent quite a bit of time with them, and we've helped Drexel students for co-op opportunities get placed there. So we have a good engagement with the GoPuff team, and they're just super fantastic guys and very aggressive, and I think they've got great growth plans.
Yep. You know, if you could go back in your career, especially when you're talking with students, some of the lessons you've learned, what would you go back and change or encourage somebody to think through differently than maybe they normally wouldn't necessarily consider because, you know, the experiences that you have had?
Everything.
Yeah.
What would I do over again?
Yeah.
I think there's a couple of things. So one is that I think it's a bit of misperception that you can only start something when you're in college and you're in your 20s. And that's not true. You can start something at any point in your life. And we see that increasingly today that boomers, baby boomers, even older generation baby boomers are increasingly starting companies at a higher rate than those in their 20s. So the opportunity today is that you can start something at any point in your life, which means you don't necessarily need to rush into starting something right away. It might be better to go work for a larger company for a period of time, learn an industry, build a network, gain some financial resources, and then start something a little bit later. So that's certainly one thing I try to instill in students. Yeah, the rest of it's going to be around a lot of the basics, blocking and tackling of startups, which is if you have an idea, to do the things in the right sequence that you need to do to really validate, is this an idea that has substance before you plow a lot of money into it? So we really, again, try to instill in students to do that early, what we would call customer validation work. You have an idea, but does anybody care? And how do you know? And how quickly and efficiently can you figure that out before you build anything? And if you install that mindset, I think that can apply to any idea that you have. And it kind of forces a bit of creativity to say, okay, I've got this idea. Before I quit my day job and run with it, how do I know? Right? How can I de-risk? We call de-risking your assumptions. How can I de-risk my most critical assumptions about that idea? So things like that. And I've certainly made many of those mistakes jumping into things where I thought there was something there, didn't test the market, didn't really validate it, jumped in, and there wasn't something there.
Yeah.
And it's hard to recover from that.
Yeah,
if you
totally
made those mistakes. Yeah.
We have a version of this that is actually a television program as well. And we had the chance to talk with the folks at Curalate.
Sure. Yeah.
And Apu was telling a story about, we came here and Nick and I had this idea, and the idea was this. And it was a really stupid idea, and it failed miserably. But it got us together and got us thinking about what we could do next. So to your point about failure and trying some new things and thinking through what the path forward is for a particular project.
Absolutely.
It was really interesting. I think the project that they were working on that didn't go well was, I think he described it as a warehousing system that combined Uber with warehousing.
Okay.
And he said, it was a really stupid idea. And I thought, how refreshing is it to hear that? And then they kept going and tried something new.
Yeah. And that's the key, right? If the quicker and more efficiently you can figure that out, the more resources you'll have left. But if you burn all of your time, money, and resources into the first version of the idea, and then you find out it's not the good one, you have nothing left. But if you can do that much more quickly, then you have the opportunity to recover and do that pivot and move on.
And you have a team assembled as well.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's important too.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of teams, it's interesting when we think about it's kind of generational, I guess, is the way I'm thinking of it. 15, 16, 17-year-olds today have exposure to or thinking about entrepreneurship as a career. Yeah. When they sit in their career you know, planning courses in high school or even talk about it at the kitchen table with their family. It's a topic that is real, where for some of us in different generations, you know, it wasn't really considered to be a career path. It was, what are you going to do with your life type of thing?
Sure.
And I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about the mindset that you're seeing in the type of student that's attracted to not just Drexel, but to a school of entrepreneurship, which sure. I don't think existed when we were kids.
It didn't. And to be honest with you, you know, our school is only 5 years old. And I think that reflects how popular entrepreneurship is and is becoming. And we're seeing this trend now across many universities where they're beginning to set up entrepreneurship outside the business schools, are certainly trying to distinguish it, because, again, it goes back to what I said earlier, the difference between the entrepreneur and entrepreneurship. Most business schools think about it as entrepreneurship, whereas we put a heavier emphasis on the entrepreneur side of it. But if you can go back to what's a 15, 16, 7-year-old thinking today, you know, shows like Shark Tank certainly reflect, I think, more than anything, the mindset and how people are thinking, how families are thinking. Certainly coming out of the last recession, where a lot of people just still didn't recover, they had to kind of figure out what are they going to do and be more entrepreneurial. And I think maybe that led their kids to think that way also, that maybe I don't want to have happen to me what happened to my parents. So I think, you know, there's probably a number of things that have led to that, as well as the availability of software technology. It's so much cheaper, quicker, easier, faster to develop something today. We see middle schoolers learning how to code. And with that, you're able to create things. And, you know, maybe it's not the best idea, but you've created something and you can try to market it, sell it. There's so many channels to do that now. You know, online, obviously, is a great way to do it. It's very simple to set up a new idea on Facebook and see if you can drive traffic to it. So you've got all this stuff around you. So I think it's a combination of kind of cultural availability of tools, mindsets, access that have just led to this kind of resurgence or insurgence of entrepreneurship around the country, certainly here in Philadelphia. Many of the high schools that we talk with are developing their own entrepreneurship programs. And even, again, going down to the middle school level, we see a lot of entrepreneurship even kind of bleeding in down at that point. So I think it's certainly here to stay as a mindset and a mode and a way for students to think about their future as opposed to a skill set. And again, you think maybe one way to think about entrepreneurship is a little more liberal arts oriented. You know, it's broad. And students that come to us oftentimes, they're not coming in with specific domain expertise, but they're coming in with I want to learn what it means to be entrepreneurial and how I can explore, and I'll figure that stuff out when I go, or I'll build a team. I'll find somebody with the skills.
It's funny you say liberal arts-like, because I think most people think business-focused or even, and I was thinking about this as we were chatting, and it's interesting. There's a rise in STEM and mm-hmm. STEAM academies that I would think would be a natural kind of launching pad into an entrepreneurship program at a university. Can you expand a little bit on the liberal arts component of it? Is interesting to me because I think most people would go to a business agenda.
Sure. So starting with STEM for a second. So when we see students, at the high school level or with us who have a specific domain expertise or capability like programming or, some computer science thing, oftentimes they'll have great ideas, but they don't necessarily know how to translate that idea into a good business, right? So that's where we come into play in terms of helping them realize that and helping them develop the entrepreneurial skills, both, again, the individual as well as the process. The other side then would be those students that maybe aren't coming in with a specific skill set, but they want to explore and they want that more liberal arts type feel. They don't want to be locked into accounting or marketing or management, one specific thing. For a variety of reasons, maybe they know that's just something they don't want to do, or maybe they realize some of the things that we talk about, which is, you have to be very careful about locking yourself into one set of skills because the future of jobs are going to be very different and you have to be very careful with that. So we just afford them the opportunity to look at it from either way, whether you're coming in with a specific skill or you're coming in much more with a liberal arts type mindset.
That makes sense. Yeah. I want to extend a little bit more on the DNA of Philadelphia and why Philadelphia and Greater Philadelphia seems to be such a special place. I think we all know that, but there's a specialness to this history of firsts, and you're familiar with sure. The city and the region is really known as a city of firsts: first medical school, first school of pharmacy, and first mint. Those kinds of things. There's literally like 60 of these things. Yeah. ENIAC was constructed not far from Drexel at the University of Pennsylvania. So And you were referencing 1776 and some of the other incubators and work co-working spaces, and we see these schools popping up. I know Camden just opened a new mm-hmm. tech center that they're really focused on getting sure. out of the ground and being successful with. And same thing in Newcastle County, Delaware. We're seeing that with Innovation 1313 and yep. the Star Campus. And I'd love to hear your view on kind of the greater Philadelphia entrepreneurship startup ecosystem and, sure. and how inspiring that seems to be.
I've been around it a long time. I've seen it grow up from much of nothing to so much of something. And what's really interesting about Philadelphia's startup ecosystem compared to other cities, and been around a lot of other city ecosystems, is that I think what you have here in Philadelphia is the most accessible but still substantive enough network of entrepreneurs and resources anywhere in the world. We're, sometimes you think of Philadelphia as a small, big city. And I think that really helps us in entrepreneurship sense, because it allows anybody, and we tell every student this, get off campus, go to a networking event. If you go to 3 or 4 networking events, you'll probably end up networking with most of the people you're going to need to know. They're going to connect to all the rest of the people you need to know. It just doesn't take you that long to build your network, which is really, really cool. And then to find access to the resources. So that's one thing. The other thing is that people are just so helpful here. Any event you go to, you can get help, assistance, guidance, feedback, and again, connect all the right resources. And as you mentioned, it's not just in Center City anymore. It's Waterfront Technology Park in Camden, 1313 in Delaware. Other initiatives out in the suburbs that we see developing. So it certainly is a region-wide thing. And one of the things that I've always tried to stress is, how do we kind of bridge that a bit so it's not just about Center City and too localized, that it really becomes about the region.
This segment of Growing Greater Philadelphia is brought to us by the Commercial Banking Division of Citizens Bank. The Citizens Bank team, they bring practical financial experience and deep industry expertise to each banking relationship. To learn how Citizens can help your company reach its full potential, visit citizensbank.com/commercial. And be sure to check out all of our podcasts at radio.com and tune in Friday mornings, 5 a.m. to Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. Thanks so much for listening to Growing Greater Philadelphia.